Good morning.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is David Campbell. I'm here with my partner, Ross Bridgman, on behalf of the petitioner, American Standard, Inc. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal to respond to the intervener union and to the NORB. This appeal arises out of lengthy contract negotiations that occurred in 2002 between the union and American Standard. The negotiations, we believe, ended in an agreement, and a private mediator that was retained by the parties, had he been permitted to testify, would have testified that an agreement was reached between the union and the company. Our first argument, however, on this appeal is that if an agreement was not reached, that there was a valid and lawful impasse which permitted the company to implement the last, best, and final offer on May 7, 2002. We believe that there's substantial evidence in the record supporting that position. In fact, we believe, based on the ALJ's decision and the lack of any decision from the board, that the undisputed evidence provides that there's an impasse. Our second argument is as to the agreement. The substantial evidence requirement requires the board to also look at conflicting evidence. And the conflicting evidence in this case is most certainly the mediator's evidence. We believe American Standard was prejudiced by the exclusion of what the ALJ called a super witness, of somebody who was going to go to the basic issue, whether an agreement was reached. Finally, I'll address this case was initially resolved in July 2003 through a settlement agreement. That settlement agreement required the implementation of the previous collective bargaining agreement that was in effect until May 7, 2002. The company complied with that settlement agreement, although there was an allegation of a breach, and that breach led to a voiding of the contract. And part of the allegations, even though there was a voiding of the settlement agreement, and they went back to the underlying cause of action, the ALJ also found a breach of the settlement agreement, and that breach supported demand flow violations. Let me begin with impasse. Substantial evidence shows that the parties were at impasse on the morning of May 1, 2002.
That's not the question. The question is whether there's substantial evidence to the contrary.
We believe there is not.
It's irrelevant whether there's also substantial evidence for your position.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, the board did not address impasse at all. The board had two opportunities. The first decision in 2008 was a two-member panel. It did not address impasse. The second decision in 2010 also did not address impasse. The ALJ on Joint Appendix 54 found that there was a factual analysis and the final meeting that took place. What occurred here was in the early morning hours of May 1, 2002, American Standard believes that a contract was reached and the mediator went to bed shortly after that contract was reached. Later that morning, around 10 a.m., 10:30 a.m. at the hotel, the ALJ set out the factual finding of JA 54, where it states that the company came in, said, "We have an agreement." The union said, "No, we don't." And at that point, the union resorted to two proposals for the company to look at. Forget the negotiations, go back to the prior agreement and extend it for 3 years. So our month of negotiations, all of our tentative agreements, everything that we've agreed to, throw that out and let's extend the same old contract for 3 years. Number two, they said, "We'll take your final proposal to the bargaining unit for ratification." They were asked, "Do you support that? Will you tell the bargaining unit to support that final proposal?" They said no. They were asked, "What would occur if that final proposal was not approved by the members?" They were told there would be an orderly shutdown. What the union said was a strike. The union's brief in this case confirms that, in fact, the local had agreed to do a strike on the day in question. And that is important because the issue on the impasse in the union's brief is on page 16 of 39. While the union had initially planned to strike if the White Book was not ratified, a decision not to do so was made by the International Union, which had to authorize a strike. So the key point there, and that is again on page 16 of the union's brief, the intervener's brief, is that on the day in question, American Standard, it can't be questioned, American Standard had reached its final proposal. It was at the end of its rope. The union said, we'll take that to ratification, and if it's not ratified, then we're going to authorize a strike. Clearly, at that point in time, the parties were at impasse. Now, the board...
Even though you'd been close to an agreement just a few hours earlier.
Well, Your Honor, as I said, odd. We do believe there's an agreement, and I will say...
It's odd to say we're right on the cusp of an agreement. In fact, we may have an agreement, but we're also a few hours later at impasse.
Well, let me explain. I think that's an excellent question. I have two points to that. First of all, the key point is the union's position that it still had 37 open issues. And those 37 open issues were its most important issues, the overtime issue. So important that the union, if you look at the facts in this case, the union went on strike a little after midnight on May 1, 2002. So 37 issues that warranted a strike. Under the union and the board's version of the facts, the parties discussed or negotiated further into the night, and they learned from the union that there's 37 open issues. We still have overtime, we have all these open issues, and at that point the company said, here's our final proposal. We believe we have an agreement. The final proposal's here. The union didn't say, let's sit down and let's go through some of these and we can drop some. The union said, we'll take your ratification. We'll take it to ratification. We'll strike if it's not. Or number two, you can go back to the existing agreement. Now, neither the ALJ nor the board addressed the TAF factors that the board set forth as to impasse or this court's decision in TrueServe factors. And we will say that this circuit on Friday in a decision set forth its case number 10-1340, which we will submit pursuant to 28J, as a post-argument case, it's Laurel Bay Health and Rehab, the NORB, again, case number 10-1340. We believe it sets forth the impasse standard, and it is equally applicable to this case in all respects. If we look at the factors, number one...
There's the well-established...
Absolutely. Well-established factors. And the board, in this case, we don't believe is entitled to any deference as to Judge Ginsburg's... question as to the standard, they never review the factors. And in this case, it is well established in a fact-intensive impasse that it's highly important for the board to look at these factors. Number one, bargaining history. It's undisputed that there was a 60-year bargaining history between the parties. No prior unfair labor practices, few strikes, none of substantial length.
New management, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So new. It's really, you're starting over.
Well,
the history seems to be of less not zero, but less relevance than it might otherwise be.
Well, certainly, if anything.
And actually new union leadership, too, I believe.
The local president was elected, most certainly. But the bargaining history over 60 years certainly favors impasse. Number two, good faith of the parties. In this case, we had a month of negotiations. We had, under any version of the facts, many, many tentative agreements. We had an agreement as to the economic portions of the agreement. We employed a private mediator who participated in many days and did shuttle caucuses, and there's been no finding of bad faith bargaining as to those 30 days. We believe that strongly favors impasse. Number three, length of negotiations. A solid month of negotiations. We believe that unquestionably favors impasse. Number four, importance of issues. The union struck on the 37 open issues just after midnight on May 1, 2002. The ALJ found that we sought to drastically alter the collective bargaining agreement, and the ALJ further found that the overtime, one of these 37 open issues, was the most critical issue for the union to get in negotiations. Clearly, importance of issues, factors four, favors American Standard. Finally, contemporaneous understanding of parties. That's the key point. And that's where it comes down to the morning around 10:30 a.m. on May 1. It can't be questioned that the company was at the end of its rope. Whether it was saying it's an agreement or it's a final proposal, the company was at the end of its rope.
As of when?
As of 10:30 a.m. at the hotel, the final meeting on May 1, 2002.
But it was saying for days thereafter that there had been an agreement.
Absolutely. And in fact, the only legal analysis that we have at the lower court or at the agency is from the ALJ saying that we didn't use the magic words. Well, the board's decisions...
I thought that was a rather misleading aspect of your brief, frankly. I'm looking at the paragraph you cited for that. I think I've got the right one. It's on JA 56. Respondent's other late-raised defense that an impasse had been reached by the early hours of May 1 is without merit. Isn't that the relevant passage?
As to the magic words,
mm-hmm.
It's our position that the board's decisions make very clear that you don't have to use magic words. When
yeah, but you're faulting the ALJ for having done just that.
We're faulting the ALJ for finding no impasse because we did not use the magic word of
right.
Merit impasse.
Right, and is that not what I, isn't that your, wouldn't you direct us and didn't you direct us to JA 56 for that?
JA 56, let me check that, Your Honor, as to joint appendix. I believe I directed you as a JA 56 to the points of that her discussion of the meeting. That is her analysis on JA 56.
Faulting you for not using the word impasse, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, as I read that, there are four reasons of which the lack of the word impasse is the fourth, and it's preceded, that sentence begins, in addition, no person on the response negotiating committee used the word impasse on the morning of May 1. And there's another sentence, instead, Massey and the other members insisted there was a contract, not an impasse. But if you strike that, there are three reasons preceding that. Right?
Yeah.
You agreed
yeah.
to continue negotiating at 10 a.m. Second, the subcommittee had not even finished going through all the non-economic issues, much less come to final positions on them. Third, each side reserved on some items, ordinarily understood to mean that you mean to come back to those, not that they've been resolved. And then in addition, no one said impasse. So I thought your brief was, frankly, out of bounds on that.
Well, Your Honor,
I was disappointed that your firm would submit that.
Your Honor, we address that because that is the only legal support for it. Out from either the board or for the ALJ, that is the only legal support that has been given to us. As to a factual argument, as she points to, without going through the factors, we believe that the factual argument, it comes down to JA 54, the final paragraph, where she sets forth the relevant facts as to this final meeting. And in that time, she says that the union arrived at 10 a.m. She says about 30 minutes later, the company's negotiators entered the room. She says that Massey stated there had been some kind of misunderstanding the evening before and that respondent had only agreed to review the open issues, not to negotiate. Says the union became angry. The union then gives two options to the company. We'll take your final proposal to the union membership for ratification, or we'll simply forget about negotiations and go back to the Red Book for 3 years. We asked in this paragraph, what happens if the union votes it down? We're going on strike. The union has said that was their idea that day. So clearly the contemporaneous understanding that morning, Your Honor, is that both sides were at the end of their rope. This was going to a ratification vote, and that ratification vote was going to determine whether there was a strike or whether there was a contract. This court in Teamsters Local Number 175 v. NLRB 788 F2D 27 found an example of impasse, and I believe it's equally applicable to this case, and I'll quote, for example, an employer might make it plain that if the union wants an agreement, it has no choice but to accept a particular offer. That can't be disputed in this case. We gave a particular last, best, and final proposal, whether we said it was an agreement or last, best, and final proposal. It clearly fits into the beginning. While the union negotiators simultaneously articulate their disapproval of the proposal, which they did, but nonetheless submit it to the union membership for approval. In this case, we add one more piece to it. They said if there's disapproval, there will be a strike. And so we believe on May 1, 2002, at 10:30 a.m., or shortly thereafter, that an impasse was present. We believe that the board should get no deference in this case. They never went through the TAF factors, never went through the TrueServe factors, and we're left here arguing about those facts, Your Honor, because the board simply was deficient in any analysis as to it. Let me address the mediator, because we believe if impasse is not found, it should be remanded for the mediator's evidence. The issue in this case, the mediator was subpoenaed. The mediator was willing to come in and testify, was willing to tell the ALJ that he believed that an agreement was reached. The standard in this case is whether American Standard was prejudiced by it, because at this point, although the ALJ found that there was some type of a public policy, the board has stepped away from that. The board found that it was merely irrelevance. We don't see how relevancy could be applied here. The proffer of evidence is on JA 342 through JA 344. We believe this proffer leaves no question that this evidence would have been highly relevant. Before I go through it, let me add one more piece to it. In this case, we were unable to cross-examine anybody as to the mediator statements when it was made in a caucus. And at the end, during our critical time period on April 30, 2002 and May 1, 2002, this was shuttle diplomacy, caucus, caucus. And the mediator, we were unable to question the union as to what did the mediator say to you when he came in.
But I don't think that's because the board said it was irrelevant, is it? They said it was exclusion was, if anything, harmless error.
The only harmless error was that the board found in 2008, and they elaborated in 2010, that they would have reached the same conclusion even if the mediator.
Therefore, the exclusion was if it was error, it was harmless, not irrelevant.
Well, the standard for this court is whether it was prejudicial to us and whether it was relevant. We believe it's unquestionably relevant. If you look at J342, the mediator will go through and does go through. First, the board finds that there was no writing of this agreement. The mediator has the writing. The mediator has the final proposal from the union, has the writing, was prepared to testify to it. The mediator also sent a letter to both parties stating that an agreement was reached. Most importantly, the mediator will explain and to put into context exactly what happened between April 30th, late at night, through the early morning hours of May 2nd. The mediator, in this case, was experienced. The mediator certainly knows when an agreement was reached. Mediator certainly knows when negotiations have come to an end. In this case,
there are still, as you have said, 37 unresolved issues.
Well, but let me explain. The mediator says, give me your last, do you guys want an agreement or are you going on strike? The union said, let us think about it. He goes through, they come out and get him in the hallway. They say, we've got final proposals, we can get an agreement. One of those was discuss the open non-economic issues. The mediator goes through what discuss means. The mediator says that the company agreed to all of the proposals. The union nonetheless went on strike. He went out, he said, you can't strike, there is an agreement. They came back to the room. And at that point, he polled each individual bargaining member of the union committee. Is there an agreement? Is there an agreement? Is there an agreement? Yes, 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 yes. He will testify to that. From that point, he got the parties together. He reviewed the memorandum of agreement that was later presented to the union, but not signed. He approved it. He looked at the discussions that were taking place, not negotiations, the discussions. And most importantly, without explanation in this record, he went to bed, never to return. If we were negotiating and we were so close to an agreement here that we just have to, why would the mediator, without explanation, leave the negotiations? There is no explanation.
Your proffer at 344, paragraph 15.
Yes.
Says there would be discussions only and would take place only after a final contract was ratified. There was to be no negotiating by the subcommittees.
Yes.
All right? But in fact, there was.
Well, in fact, we don't believe it was. The issue from
the
ALJ.
What I mean is, I don't know either, but I know that the ALJ credited the union's testimony as to the significance of these non-economic issues and the statement that the company just didn't get it. And so until they could have agreement on those issues, the union was going to go on this strike.
Well, Your Honor, at this point, number 15 was after the strike. This is at when they create the subcommittees and person
right.
verifies. If we have an agreement on a contract, I can sit down with you and agree to additional terms. If we have an agreement at that point in time, it's an agreement. It's enforceable. It's on all terms. If I want to sit down to you and say, you know what, I think I have a great contract. I want to give a bonus to the employees. I can certainly sit down and do that. The issue
right,
is,
but the,
do we have a contract?
The mediator left early in the morning
Absolutely.
Of May 1. So he wasn't there when all the rest of this stuff happened.
Well, what? Here's the timing. Late.
No, it says he went to bed.
Well, exactly. Once the discussions start, he goes to bed because he says, we have a contract, everybody. You're simply discussing, we have a contract, I'm going to bed, never to return. They discuss, negotiate for 2 hours. The next morning at 10 o'clock is when they come back, and that's when the union says, we don't have an agreement. And that's when the company says, well, we're not moving anymore. That is where we're at. We have a contract. We're not moving.
What your proffer is that Pearson went to bed around 2 a.m. believing that a final agreement had been reached. That's your proffer.
Absolutely.
The board says, but there was no written agreement that was initialed or, what did they say, initialed or, where is it? Initialed or signed. There was no written agreement or signed or initial document of any kind memorializing the alleged agreement between the parties prepared on the May 1, contrary to both parties' prior practice and the common collective bargaining practice generally.
When the proffer and footnote 8 of the ALJ's decision, the ALJ found footnote 8, and let me...
All right, that's 52.
Respondents sought to introduce both the testimony of the mediator and a written notation allegedly made by him. And that written notation is addressed in the proffer, which shows what does it take to get a contract? The union wrote him down. He went over to the company. Can we get him? He marked them each.
We're talking past each other. A notation and an agreement. Your proffer doesn't say those are one and the same.
He's testifying that it is written confirmation of the agreement. But, Your Honor, I think that our discussion here highlights the fact that this is highly relevant evidence, that this goes to the impeachment.
No, it doesn't. I mean, that's the point. It shows exactly the opposite.
The point, Your Honor, goes to when we come in the next morning and say this is the agreement, it's highly relevant to both the impasse and to the agreement. It explains why we come in and why we say we have an agreement, and it explains the discussions or the negotiations. But the bottom line, Your Honor, it doesn't matter, as I said, what took place in the early morning hours. If we have an agreement on all terms, I can certainly give back. I can certainly sit down. I can renegotiate certain pieces. It doesn't change the fact that we have an agreement. The contract has been set. We have an agreement. You're going to buy the car for $10,000. I can sit down with you, Your Honor, say, you know what, I got a great deal here. Why don't I throw in some floor mats or throw in a radio or whatever? That doesn't change the fact of you're buying the car for $10,000. In this case, the mediator went to bed. And, Your Honor, with our discussion as to what does this fact mean, what does the discussions mean, why did he go to bed, all those are things that the ALJ should have had access to. We have no privilege here. We have no... we don't have a mediator who's saying he's not coming in to testify.
The ALJ examined that evidence, correct?
She did not.
She could not have concluded that it wouldn't change her mind unless she'd examined it and decided that there would still be substantial evidence for her position. Is that wrong?
Honor,
what did she say?
That is not right. Footnote 8, we believe she found that it is relevant, contrary to the board. Footnote 8 says...
go ahead.
Mediator testimony on these same points, and those points being on whether a meeting of the minds occurred, might be considered to be, quote, more authoritative, close quote, because of his ostensibly neutral status.
Which, thus, by the way, in your brief said that it was, quote, authoritative. I mean, again, I'm very disappointed at how misleading your brief is on this point.
Your Honor, she says that he was authoritative.
It's in scare quotes, saying he may be more authoritative in the sense because he's in this official position, right?
Because he knows when an agreement's been reached. He was employed by the parties only to reach an agreement. She calls him a super witness.
All right. You are well over your time.
Yeah,
and
well,
we've obviously taken up some time. Why don't we hear from the board?
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Heather Beard and I represent the National Labor Relations Board, and we seek enforcement of our order in full against American Standard. This case involves not just the unfair labor practices that you were discussing with my opposing counsel just now. There were also other extensive unfair labor practices in addition to the company's unlawful failure to bargain with the union before implementing its proposals.
I wanted to ask you one quick question on the issues that are not briefed, where you're seeking enforcement. The reply brief makes a point that it may be that some of those provisions have been overtaken by events. You know, for instance, there has been bargaining. A notice was posted. Is that correct? And therefore, were we to order enforcement, we should update that order or leave it as is, and then the board takes that into account later?
Yes, Your Honor. What you said, the latter, is absolutely correct. The board is entitled to summary enforcement, and the case law in this circuit is clear, and in all circuits, I believe, on that, even if there has been some type of compliance or events that have taken over. And in this instance, that would be evidence as to what would need to be done in the compliance proceeding.
Thank you.
So this case comes down to the company being in the midst of negotiating over the union's, as my opposing counsel conceded, most significant issues, and the company stopping and simply unilaterally implementing new terms under, and by doing so violating the act. And as I think my co-counsel's presentation demonstrated, these defenses that have been put up by the company are at best inconsistent and at worst shifting, such that their answer to any question is we, American Standard, at any point can do whatever we want. And what the board found based on the credited evidence of the union negotiators is that the parties were engaged in negotiation during April, during the wee hours of May 1st, and during when they walked in at 10 a.m. on May 1st and were shocked to hear that the company was claiming there was an agreement. And we can talk about the mediator evidence with regard to this as well. What the board found, as Judge Rogers pointed out, is that the relevant time frame was the morning of May 1st when the mediator was not there. There were negotiations. Regardless of what they're called, discussion, negotiation, there was the actual give and take between subcommittees of each party on the most important issues to the union, i.e. the issues of job bidding and overtime. They were in the middle of negotiating and only took a break to get some sleep. No mediator was there at any of that time, and thus what the board found is that there's compelling evidence on this record that there was no agreement, there was no meeting of the minds between the parties, the union and the respondent. So perhaps recognizing that, years later, the company presents the opposite argument that on the morning of May 1st and later, the company had reached the end of its rope. The evidence, however, and as Your Honors pointed out, that the ALJ and the board, by adopting most of the ALJ's decision, analyzed all of the factors of impasse. And in analyzing whether or not there was an impasse, we do not, as the company would like, ignore the fact that at the same exact time the company was claiming agreement, but consider that as well as the parties' bargaining positions, as well as the movement that morning that had been made by the parties. And what you have here is a case of no agreement and no impasse, but rather simply bargaining that the company abruptly stopped. And when the company does that, the company is not entitled to implement a unilateral proposal, which is indeed what the company went ahead and did. So for purposes of the two defenses that we have for agreement and impasse, neither one of them stands up, and the board's substantial evidence is there to support the well-crafted findings by the judge that was adopted by the board. And we didn't speak, my opposing counsel didn't speak too much on the issue of the demand flow, which is the next unilateral change that took place. And if there are no more questions on impasse or agreement, I would be happy to move on to demand flow if Your Honors have any questions on that.
No questions.
No questions. Okay. Unless you have anything else, I'm happy to sit down, and we ask that you enforce the board's order in full.
Thank you. Counsel for intervener.
Thank you very much. May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ross Andrews. I'm an attorney from Syracuse, New York. I represent the intervener Glass Molders Pottery Plastics and Allied Workers Union in this matter. Even though a lot has happened since American Standard imposed its contract, there are a lot of people in Tiffin, Ohio, who are hoping that a decision by this court will bring this case closer to its conclusion. After listening to nearly 4 weeks of testimony, the administrative law judge determined that the credible evidence required the conclusion that both parties, the union and the company, knew that negotiations were not over on May 1, 2002, and that a final agreement required resolution of the non-economic issues that both parties agree were so important to the union membership. The board reviewed the evidence and came to precisely the same conclusion, and the board supported that finding with many logical reasons, including the undisputed conduct of the parties early on the morning of May 1st, and the fact that a high-level company official admitted on the morning of May 1st that negotiations were continuing and that no agreement had been reached. It's respectfully submitted that the conclusion that the bargaining had not ended was well within the board's discretion. Perhaps in recognition of that fact, the company has at this time elevated to its primary argument the claim that an impasse had been reached, and I think that assertion similarly should be rejected. The argument should fail not only because the parties were making progress right up to the time that the company abruptly terminated the negotiations, but they had plans to resume those negotiations. The union repeatedly requested to continue bargaining, I think showing clearly the union's state of mind that it did not believe there was any impasse. And I would say counsel repeatedly referred to the 37 issues. Well, they came to some agreements during the course of the night after midnight, and they eliminated some of those 37 issues, and had they continued to bargain, they would have continued to do so. I want to comment in particular on two impasse factors that counsel raised. One is good faith of the parties, and the union believes that the employer really can't make that claim. They very abruptly terminated what had been continuing negotiations in spite of an agreement to continue, and that's what prompted the union to come back with other alternatives. It didn't happen in a vacuum. They didn't abruptly decide that they were not going to allow the company any other choice. Then the contemporaneous understanding, the company didn't even raise this defense for 2 years after the operative events. They didn't claim it at all prior to the first time that this case was going to go to a hearing. And, you know, once again, although it may not be determinative that the word impasse was not used, there was never any expression by either party, I don't think, that they were at the end. The union made written offers to continue bargaining, to continue the terms as had been agreed and as had been undertaken. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. All right, counsel for petitioner, we'll give you a minute.
Okay, Your Honor. Your Honors, we believe the impasse is clearly set forth in the facts as the ALJ found them on JA-54. We have participated in over a month of negotiations. We believe that there was an agreement. In any event, we said we are done. This is our last, best, and final. The union at that point did not say let's sit down in small committees. The union regressed, and the union said we're either going back to the original contract for 3 years or we'll take it to ratification for a vote. We believe that the D.C. Prior panel decision falls squarely into this. There is no point of whether we believe it's an agreement of good faith or whether we believe it's impasse. It's of no import. We were done negotiating. We had given and given from what the mediator showed. They had 37, in their view, as the board set out, most significant issues. We clearly fall within the impasse, and I don't know any way that the facts could not fall into them. In addition, we have an absence of any discussion from the board. We don't have any review of the factors, that we have simply adopted an ALJ's decision who also doesn't review the factors.
Those factors are clearly set up. All right, now that's repeating your earlier argument. Anything new?
Yes, demand flow. It's very simple. They said there was a unilateral action. In fact, it was a settlement agreement between the parties where we re-implemented the prior contract. As part of that re-implementation, we set wages. The board disagreed with those wages. There was not a revocation of the settlement agreement until after a successor collective bargaining agreement had been agreed to by the parties. The voiding of the agreement doesn't change the fact that we set the wages pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement. There was a grievance and arbitration proceeding under that contract. It is certainly not a matter of negotiation. We had already negotiated to a process. We followed that process, so it is not an 8A5 violation.
All right. We have your brief on that. Anything else?
Nope. That is it, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.